This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Today, we want to share with you the remarkable life of Ruth Stone. Born in 1915, Stone wrote 13 books of poetry, all while raising three kids, largely alone. She won the National Book Award, was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, and in 2007, Vermont named her its Poet Laureate. The Norwich-based filmmaker Nora Jacobson is about to release a new documentary called Ruth Stone's Vast Library of the Female Mind. It premieres at Montpelier's Savoy Theater next week. Filmmaker Nora Jacobson joins me now to tell us more about Stone's life and work. Nora, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you so much, Michaela. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, for those who have not heard the name Ruth Stone before, tell us, who was she? What was her life and career like?
Well, Ruth was a poet who had been living very happily with her poet husband, who was also a professor. And then in 1959, he mysteriously, for reasons that no one knows, apparently, committed suicide. And she was flung out into the world with three young kids to support. And she began traveling the country, being a wandering, itinerant professor of poetry and creative writing. And she would always come back to her summer home in Vermont, which eventually ended up being her permanent home. And that's why eventually she was named Poet Laureate of Vermont.
And what was her poetry like? How would you describe it for someone who has not read the work of Ruth Stone before?
I would say that it's very vivid, but not terribly abstract. It's concrete. So it's not a kind of puzzle, which a lot of poetry is, and poetry has the reputation of being difficult to read and to understand. And her poetry is not, because it's grounded in real life and in the world around her and the people she sees. And actually, the title of the film, Ruth Stone's Vast Library of the Female Mind, comes from a poem she wrote when she was sitting in a diner watching these three men sitting at the counter and talking. And she observes them and she, you know, what they're like. And it all goes into what she calls the vast, confused library of the female mind.
Oh, I can relate to that. I feel like my mind is often feeling vast and confused. Now, in the late 1950s, as you mentioned, when Stone was in her 40s, her husband died by suicide, and she was left to raise their three daughters on her own. How do you see this tragedy as shaping her and her poetry?
The tragedy affected her in profound ways, not only, of course, just in terms of her livelihood. I mean, she hadn't gone to college. She didn't have a way to support herself except through writing, but also emotionally. I mean, she adored him. She and her husband were very much in love. And so the fact that he killed himself and didn't tell them why, left no note, was this mystery that haunted her for the rest of her life. And she wrote about it, not necessarily in concrete terms, but often metaphorically. For example, in one poem, "When you come back to me, it will be crow flying time." You know, so she talks about him in a way of him always being present. One poem that I adore called "Then," she says, "That winter, an ermine moved into the house." She talks about him coming to her in these unexpected ways. And it's not that she just wrote about him her whole life. No, there are poems about nature and science and many other things. And they're funny poems. It's not a morose kind of poetry. But she did always, until the day she died, until the day she stopped writing, always wrote about him as well.
Now, one of the things that struck me about Ruth Stone in her career, when I was preparing for this interview, was learning that even though she was born during World War I, her poetry didn't really receive major recognition until later in her life, in the 1990s, the 2000s. She won the National Book Critics Circle Award in 1999, the National Book Award in 2002, got a Pulitzer Prize nomination in 2009, just a couple years before her death. So I'm curious, do you have any thoughts on why her work didn't receive this type of recognition until so late in her life?
Part of the reason she didn't receive recognition has to do with being a widow, that she was a woman. And after all, then there was still a lot of sexism in the literary world. Some might say it still exists today, although it's not as bad as it had been. We talk about it in the film quite a bit. When her husband was still alive, she published her first book, and he actually helped her get it published. He had written a letter to the editor of Norton, I believe, and said, "You have to publish this woman's poetry." And they said, "No." And he wrote another letter saying, "No, but you have to. It's really great." And they did. And that was her first book, but it was him promoting her that made that happen. Afterwards, when she didn't have Walter to help her, and when she was on her own raising her kids, it was much more difficult. She basically didn't have time for self-promotion. She was just working constantly and traveling constantly. And every artist knows that you do have to do a certain amount of that to get your work out.
Yeah, that's true. Now, speaking of being an artist and self-promotion, I would love to hear a little bit more about your process of making this film. When you first learned about Ruth Stone and started reading her poetry, what made you say, "I need to make a film about this"?
Well, I met her. I was hired by Chard Dunyord to shoot a little interview with her back in 2009. And I actually didn't know who she was, even though, you know, I'm the daughter of two poets. We didn't know the name Ruth Stone. And Chard said, I want you to meet this amazing poet, Ruth Stone, and bring your camera. We're going to videotape her." Mm-hmm. And I did. I went in 2009 and I met her and I immediately fell in love with her. There was something about her presence, her gaze, the way she spoke and the way she recited her poetry from by heart that I said then to Chard, "Oh, I don't want to just do one interview. I actually want to make a whole film about her." And finally it's done.
Now, Ruth Stone became Vermont's Poet Laureate in 2007. What does your film say about those years of her life and the role she played in this state?
Poet Laureates, at least in Vermont, they do different things. Mary Ruefeli, who I think is now Poet Laureate, what she does is she opens a phone book and sends poems by mail to people. But Ruth, she was very elderly at the time. She was just about blind, and she was living with her daughter, Marcia. And so she couldn't get around. And so her role of Poet Laureate, I believe, was to be this presence in Vermont that people occasionally would come and visit and talk to, but she was not mobile. She couldn't go around the state. So I think for her, it was a honorary position to have that recognition. I do know that she was able to go to the ceremony with her, I think, with her granddaughters, and they helped her onto the dais and helped her read a poem, but she was very immobile at that point.
We've talked about some of the dark and the difficult times that Ruth Stone and her family endured. And I want to play a clip now of something beautiful that emerges in your film. And this is Ruth Stone gathered with her daughters and granddaughters trying to remember a poem that she had written.
How did it start?
It wasn't started. It didn't start now I'm old.
No.
Now I am old. All I want to do is try.
But when I was young, if it wasn't easy, I let it lie. Learning through my pores instead.
And it did neither of us any good.
For now she is gone, who slept away my life. And I am ignorant who inherited. Though the head has grown so lively that I stamp, come look, come stomp, come listen to the drum.
No, I love that moment. It gives me goosebumps. And we're hearing after getting help getting the poem started, Ruth goes on to finish reciting the poem alone. So what does your film say about the daughters and granddaughters that Ruth Stone was surrounded with throughout her life?
They listened to her read. They listened to her recite poetry all their lives. They grew up listening to poetry. And it wasn't just Ruth's poetry, but Ruth encouraged them all to write and to be artists. So she was surrounded by many women, young women, older women. She did have a couple of grandsons as well, but it was a very female oriented household. And so that particular day when I filmed that, yes, it gave me goosebumps too. I immediately knew that was such a precious moment to capture. There are a couple of other scenes in the film where she is surrounded by her granddaughters and reciting poetry.
Your film includes newer footage, archival footage, interviews with Stone's friends and family, and it also includes animations, which aren't something you see in every documentary. So why did you make that stylistic choice?
Well, I was faced with a challenge when I decided I wanted to make a film about her. How do you make a film about a poet whose medium is words? Poetry is something it's such an internal process. And I didn't want to illustrate visually her poems because I want every reader to imagine their own images when they read her poems. So I thought, well, how can I make this film visual? And I knew that Bianca Stone, one of Ruth's granddaughters, is a visual artist as well as a poet herself. And she had written a book called Poetry Comics. And I thought, well, I wonder if she knows animation. She didn't know animation, really. I mean, she had played around with it as a child. But I asked her, I said, well, would you be willing to do some animations for the movie? And she said, well, all right. And she took a class at the Center for Cartoon Studies in White River Junction and then started doing these very handmade animations, stop animations in some cases. She would send them to me and we would go back and forth. And then I was able to incorporate quite a few of them in the film.
Now, one thing I noticed about the film is that Ruth's longtime home in Goshen, Vermont is featured prominently. And in some ways, it's another character in the documentary. So tell us about that choice and how the home is used today.
The reason I wanted to use Ruth's house as part of the film is that it played such an important role in her life. It was a place of refuge that she came back to during her travels, and that ended up being her home. And I thought it was really fitting when I found out that Bianca Stone, her granddaughter, and Bianca's husband, Ben, were renovating it to be a writer's retreat. I thought that was such a fitting way possibly to end the film, that the house is being renovated to now engender a new generation of poets. And I thought that Ruth would be really happy to know that her house was being used that way, because her life was about her poetry, but now her life and her home are being used to give birth to new poets and new poetry.
That's Nora Jacobson, the filmmaker behind the new feature-length documentary about Vermont poet Ruth Stone. It's called Ruth Stone's Vast Library of the Female Mind, and it premieres next week in Montpelier. There will also be showings in the weeks and months ahead across the state, and we're going to have some details about those screenings on our website, vpr.org. Nora Jacobson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Michaela. It's been a pleasure.